Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your Owlpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of your hosts, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, coming at you from a new Owlpost address, Drea Kaufman.
Yay! Well, the official government USPS owls can't find us yet. But I'm hoping that our wizarding world owls can find us, so.
Yes, I'm sure that they'll be able to. And you know what? While we've been gone, while you've been moving, people have actually been finding us with some owls because we've gotten some new reviews.
Yay!
So, one of them says, love it, 5 stars. It's from Katie Jane. She actually gave us a heart after her name. And then it also says, perfect. I don't feel like reading, so I just listen. Thanks. Heart, heart, heart. By the way, what house are you in? I'm Hufflepuff. So, Drea, tell her, let Katie know what house you're in.
I like to think that I am in Gryffindor. I'm a little Griffin. Gryffindor. I'm a little Ravenclaw. Little Gryffindor, little Ravenclaw, for the most part. Depending on the day or what it is, kind of depends on which house I associate with. But I'm definitely one of the two. And by the way, my husband's a Hufflepuff.
You're a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll.
And my husband is a Hufflepuff. So, you know, you're in good company there, Katie. And my daughter is most definitely a Slytherin. So we have it all in the family.
I wonder how many parents think that about their children, that their child is a Slytherin.
She's like super smart, but then she definitely has her evil streaks. So
that's awesome. I myself am a Ravenclaw as well. And I'm also married to a Hufflepuff, which I have found that seems to be very similar, that a lot of people that are Ravenclaws tend to be married to Hufflepuffs, because I have another really good friend of mine in podcasting who he is the same way.
I feel like those of us who are super smart need that like emotional grounding that and the kindness that comes with the Hufflepuff. Like we're so, I'm so type A. I need someone who's not type A to like keep me a little grounded in things. Yeah. So I feel like that's why that's a nice winning combo right there.
So we also got another review that said wonderful Harry Potter podcast, 5 stars from Target RPH. And they said, so glad I found this podcast. I'm already on to book 4, and it's so enjoyable to listen to. I originally got into the Harry Potter universe because I found out that owls delivered wizards' mail, and I love it. Of course, Owlpost was the podcast for me. Matt and Drea are lovely hosts, great radio voices. Yes, we definitely have faces for radio, at least I do. Drea, on the other hand, you know, gorgeous. But and they said that they enjoy our takes on the variety of Harry Potter subjects, and they can't wait to get caught up so they can discuss the chapters with us in real time on the interwebs. You know, even if you go back, you can still discuss.
Oh yeah, we'll revisit that with you.
We'll remember. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They said they did have one complaint because sometimes the sound quality in the earlier episodes sometimes was inconsistent, which happens every once in a while. Sometimes we pull away from the microphone when we shouldn't. That the people should keep listening because this is a wonderful Harry Potter podcast for kids or adults.
Aw, thanks. And good to know.
Except for when I have to bleep Drea.
Yeah, so. That happens occasionally. Guilty! We tried to work on the sound quality. Hopefully it got better. I'm glad you tell people to push through because we're tired here.
You know what I will say? I think no matter how good any podcast is, and I've listened to a lot, especially even officially produced podcasts from, you know, very large media organizations, sometimes it just happens and it's just part of the process. Yeah. So with audio, yes, we thank you for listening, though. We really appreciate it. We did get a couple emails, too. One was from Justin. He said, hey, Matt and Drea, I just wanted to say thanks for your awesome podcast. You do such a great job of giving us a breakdown of the entire book, and I love the effort and commitment you bring to each episode. You guys make my drives to work back and forth so much more enjoyable. I just wanted to say thank you for bringing me the nostalgia back with Harry Potter without having read without having to read the books again. Rock on, 5-star podcast. So thank you.
I know,
you.
I love
yeah,
this.
Yeah, people writing us emails. It's so nice. And last but not least, Lauren wrote us an email, and hers is longer, so I'm not going to read the whole thing, but she did have a really, she was talking about this idea of, she loves the fact that mm-hmm. we are kind of like Harry Potter nerds. And one of the things she was saying is she loves how J.K. Rowling is so much because she doesn't do anything in her writing just because. And she gave one of the examples of the fact that Trelawney's first name is Sybil, which obviously refers to the Sybilis, who in ancient Greece and Rome and Persia were the prophecy seers. And then, of course, not only that, but we also learned that Cassandra was her mother, her great-grandmother, excuse me. Yeah, and that, of course, she was dedicated to the god Apollo and cursed because her prophecies were never believed. So, like, all of these things, which, you know, absolutely, J.K. Rowling is so good with the names of things, with the way her universe works. It's very internally consistent for the most part. So, yes, I'm just like you, Lauren. I love all that minutia because, honestly, is raised on, you know, Star Wars and Tolkien. And so you really, I really enjoy people who put a lot of time and effort into their world building.
I totally agree. And she still loves it too, right? She still today will talk about it and embellish on it. And I agree. I love what she brings, what J.K. Rowling brings yeah. to the table here. So not email or rating related. I had an in-person recommendation for the podcast.
No way.
So someone that I know in the workplace actually came up and told me that she has been working on her, she's been joining our like company Toastmasters program. And so she uses our podcast as a way to learn how to present and how to speak to large groups and to help her build confidence as someone to look after because she loves Harry Potter. And so she latched on and has been listening to our podcast to help her develop her own presentation skills. And I was both really flattered and a little embarrassed all at the same time to have someone you know listening to you every day or however often she listens. But I thought that was really great. And it's also just a It was really unique and something I never, I mean, you expect, you know, we ask for reviews and things like that. And I think that's really great and kind of what goes with a podcast. And this was totally unexpected for me. And I was so, I just was caught off guard and it was amazing. So big shout out there to thank her for her support and hope we don't let her down, you know, no pressure or anything.
That's one of the most amazing things I've heard, like, from a podcast. I really appreciate her listening and the fact that she feels like that we can help her in that way. I will say, you know, one of the things that I've appreciated about podcasting for so many years now is that it has helped me be able to speak in a way that where I can think quicker on my feet, you know? Yes, look, these podcasts are also edited. So there are times when either Drea and I cannot remember something that we really want to be able to remember, and we either have to look it up or we have to sit there and think for a second until we figure it out. So we're not this smooth all the time. But we do our best to really talk through the issue and what we're thinking about. And this definitely has helped me to be able to do that, because practice at thinking critically through anything, whether it's a book or a movie or a TV show or something like that, and putting it down verbally is all about making arguments that which are hopefully internally consistent as you're talking through that. And it takes practice,
well, and
for sure,
because yeah.
I was not this smooth, folks, at the beginning.
Well, and I think, too, it also helps you to learn how to present. Like, you read a whole chapter, and we don't sit here and read the chapter, right? We have to kind of highlight what's important and pick and choose and then discuss what that means. So it requires you to take all of that and distill it down into a more digestible formula for our listeners. So hopefully that's what we're able to accomplish, you know, and I definitely agree that it's a skill, and we continue to get better, and we have our bad days and our good episodes, right? And so it was really insightful to know that I felt so honored to know that I was making a difference in somebody's life beyond just sharing my thoughts on Harry Potter, which was totally unexpected. So big and yeah. I thought it was really brave of her to share that too, like that she's going through this journey and what we have brought to help her on that journey. I thought it was so amazing and she's just incredible. So it was really great to hear. And it was, I just wanted to make sure to share that with you, Matt, and as well as with our audience and for her to know how much we really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, we just thank you so much for everybody who's been giving us reviews and ratings on Apple Podcasts or sending us emails. It means so much to us to get those. And yeah, please keep them coming. You know, we read those things out on the show. So anytime you give us a star rating review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read that. You can give us a review wherever you give your podcasts. And make sure you're subscribed so you get the show as soon as it drops. We usually try to stay consistent for you guys week by week. Obviously, sometimes, you know, we got life that happens. So we appreciate you guys sticking with us and being excited about when we come back. But what's so fun about this week is we're diving into The Half-Blood Prince. And so we're going to be starting a whole new book now. You can find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And thenerdparty.com is a great place to go to check out all the shows that we're doing here on thenerdparty.com. And while you're over there, you can go to the contact section, and that's the way you can send Drea and I an email, which we read and then can also read on the show. So, Drea, this chapter 1, is called The Other Minister. And I would say, I remember reading this book for the very first time and thinking, wow, this is the most unlikely of places to start this book. Because you just end the last book like on this emotional like high with Harry and everything. And then the very first chapter, we're like nowhere near Harry. We're at 10 Downing Street.
Yeah, this is one of the first times where the book doesn't start with Harry. And it's the first time that it doesn't start on Privet Drive, right? We aren't starting with the Dursleys. So it's really unique. And at first, you kind of start reading and you're like, why? This is that chapter. This is one of those things she does as a writer. Like, why am I looking at this? Like, why am I hearing this? And it's sort of the first time we've ever really had an interaction with a specific muggle that isn't the Dursleys.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other time that we do this, and again, it's a even numbered book, it's 4 when we start at the Riddle House and that's we're true. With the caretaker. Yeah. So that's, they're very similar beginnings here, but this one is so interesting because honestly, it doesn't really start with anything we think matters. But I wanted to start this chapter off by talking about why I think this matters. Mm-hmm. I think we need this idea and this understanding of how things in the wizarding world impact the rest of the world. And this chapter helps us understand the stakes. Like immediately J.K. Rowling is setting the stakes for not only what's happening, again, in the wizarding world, but the fact that for the return of Voldemort impacts more than just our characters that we've been spending time with. The return of Voldemort impacts the entire world, and the entire world is in danger.
Or at least all of the UK.
Because of what's happening. Well, yes, but I mean, you also get the sense that, like, if he's able to do what he wants to do there, it's not going to stop.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it's so interesting, too, because this is one of those, I like to think of it as one of those mechanisms that authors don't use very often to really impart the severity of what's going on in her universe. Mm-hmm. She's created gives her a unique opportunity to do that, to show sort of an outside opinion instead of just saying, this is a big deal. He's going to take over the world, right? You're literally getting to see the other side and see the additional collateral damage, if you will, that's being created that you wouldn't normally think of, right? You don't think, we haven't thought about the right. Muggle world really, other than don't let them know you exist.
Well, and this gives us an opportunity to do a couple of things. One, what we see here is a continuation of the political themes that we were playing with in the first in the Order of the Phoenix. And what we actually see here happening is something, again, that is so akin to where we are today in our political world, is that the prime minister is being blamed for all of these things that have been happening, especially this bridge collapse. Again, she's just nailing what the world is like to even now, which is he's being blamed for things in ways that aren't truthful, but they sound good and they're politically expedient, you know? So the truth is that the bridge that collapsed should not have collapsed. There were enough police. There were all of these things that he's being blamed for, but none of them are true. But the opponent is using a politically expedient falsehoods to garner support. And, you know,
he's being an opportunist. He's capitalizing on the situation and politicizing it in a manner that is...
I mean, let no good chaos go
right,
unused.
Let no good deed go unpunished, right? Like, he's doing his best and challenging his political authority, using this as political capital in order to further his own agenda and his own power grab, right? Which is... very similar to the sort of dichotomy, non-political, but same power grab as we see unfolding here in the wizarding world outside of their sort of parliamentary approach, mm-hmm. which we also learn in this chapter has had a significant shift.
Yeah, absolutely. One, I love that we learned that unlike the Order of the Phoenix, the weather is not hot. It is misty and drizzly and awful. Which is a complete dichotomy from the last book. Mm-hmm. And like you said too, yes, there's been a massive shift in the wizarding world. And what's so funny about this book is that this is her way of being able to recap everything that's happened in the series through a completely different lens, but still give readers a
quick summary.
A nice, yes, yes. And it's really smart. I mean, like, this is just really smart way of bringing readers back up to speed with all the things that have been going on. And it's kind of fun to see it through the eyes of a completely non-magical character who honestly didn't know magic existed until he became the prime minister.
Yeah, what I love about this is this is sort of like a moment in any like childhood family friendly movie where the kids know the toys are alive, but the parents don't. And then the parents come to this realization. It's like, it reminds me of what's the Santa Claus movie where you have to believe, or Elf,
yes,
you have
yeah.
to believe in Santa, right? And kids believe in Santa, but adults think it's ridiculous. And then they're proven wrong, right? Like, this is that moment where it seems so far fetched and us as readers just accepted it as truth. And now we're introduced to something where, nope, they don't accept it as truth. It's life-altering and shattering to them. And the rest of us are like, this is so exciting. And they're like, no, this is a hoax. So I really love how she uses that whole approach to really impart on the severity and the crazy nature in which we find ourselves. And I love that we revisit one of my favorite magical elements, which is the talking portraits. I love the live... portraits are probably one of my all-time favorite magical things that she used. And so I love the little subtle hints to it, like the little cough and that he swore at some point that the figure in the portrait just walked away. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's so funny that this is the way in which that the magical world prime minister, you know, meets with the minister for magic. And it seems so smart, too. And what I love is that he tries everything he can to get rid of it, and it won't come off. Mm-hmm. So he's just stuck with it, which is fantastic. And so he ends up having this meeting with Fudge, and we kind of go through all the different meetings they've had. Like the first meeting when he just became prime minister, and he's like, oh, you know, hopefully nothing ever happened and we'll never have to be here. And then in his third year, ooh, there's this whole serious black matter and... like, oh, isn't that awful?
And then we have dragons, you know, in the next year.
And sphinxes being imported.
Being moved and just the ridiculous, the way, when you put it like this, when you put it into these oversimplified terms, it seems like the most absurd things have happened. Just absolutely absurd. So totally unrelatable and unfathomable that these are happening. But when we think back over our last episodes and our reading of the last five books, we believe it. We've been able to find relatable things in it. It feels real to us. So it's just taking it to this oversimplification is just, it creates this level of like absurdity that's really funny.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what I really appreciate too is, you know, the way in which as they go through all of this, you know, then the prime minister is yelling at Fudge saying like, why aren't you doing anything about this? Well, and he's like, you don't actually think that I'm still in charge after everything I just told you. And there's this moment where he kind of like, oh, he kind of has a little bit of pity for Fudge. Like he's, because as a politician, he can feel what he's feeling. And I think that's kind of great. But, you know, him telling him, look, all of these things, what's so funny about this too, is that this is one of those moments where too, politically, we kind of see the way it works in our own world, which is everything that people thought they knew in the immediate aftermath of something, for the most part, turned out to be wrong. Like the fact that Sirius Black was actually a murderer, the fact that the Dementors were on our side. You know, all of these things, we're seeing the ways in which not knowing the full story really impact the outcome of everything. And of course, too, it's the reason Fudge isn't the prime minister anymore, because he wasn't willing to deal with the reality that Voldemort was actually back. And so I really appreciate, not only is she kind of recapping, but she's also helping drive the point home of why somebody like Fudge has lost his power because of all of these things that have he's done wrong. And I think I really appreciate her just kind of driving this point home in this chapter.
Well, I think it also speaks to something we've kind of talked about, probably very super high level at this point, but like we have to learn from our mistakes. We have to learn from others. We have to look at our history of where we've been to determine where we're going to go and how we're going to get there. And I think this is just her showing the prime minister like, hey, this person is also in a political position and made a lot of the bad calls. Like you should be able to find something relatable here and make a different decision yourself, right? Like how are you going to do this differently in the future? I just think that there's so much to that he can relate to and how things were handled and not living in that state of denial. Don't be a power grab, like do the right thing. And so I think that's super interesting. I also really love, so I like that. And it's so different, like the two announcements, because now we meet the new prime minister of magic, minister of magic. And then even the announcement of his arrival is drastically different, right? Our new minister of magic is much more succinct and to the point and is like, he'd like your presence now. Is that okay? Okay, great, thanks. Like, it's just so much more to the point than the last one. There seems to be less bravado around it, I guess. So it's just, it's interesting.
I also, what's really fascinating too is we get the reason that all of these bad things has happened.
Right. So oh, that's true. Sorry.
It's no, it's okay. I almost forgot as well. So the bridge fell because of a Death Eater attack. The fact that we have these murders that have happened are also Death Eater attacks. Amelia Bones, who died. And she was the head of the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, and she was in the classic, like, she was in a locked room, but she's dead. How did she die? Well, we know how she died, but that doesn't really help us catch the person. Emmeline Vance is also been found dead. What they thought was a hurricane on the West Coast was not a hurricane. It was a giant attack. The reason the weather sucks here is because Dementors are no longer guarding Azkaban, but they're breeding, which that just sounds awful.
I know, that sounded like the most awful part of all of this, honestly.
Yep. Do not want to know how that happens. So everything that the you know, Muggle Prime Minister thinks he knows about what's happened has a logical explanation through magic. And it's a scarier one because, you know, these are things to which non-wizards, muggles, have no way of really helping themselves.
Right, there's no protection.
And so, so they really are at the at the mercy then of the magical community being able to stop this. And you can understand why he's like, you have to stop this. And he's like, what do you think we've been trying to do? So, and then we meet Scrimgeour, which I think is really great because, yes, he is no nonsense. He also wants the Prime Minister to have better security. So they're going to add to his security, who he finds out, yes, was Kingsley Shacklebolt, which was fantastic. He's like, I love Kingsley Shacklebolt. Oh, well, he's a wizard. Well, wait a minute. You can't put people in my office.
Well, I just did.
Yes, it's so great. He's like, oh, I thought you said you liked him. Well, yeah. Okay, well, then there's not a problem. And they also, I really like what he says. He's like, you're wizards. Like, why can't you just do magic and sort this all out? And I love what Scrimgeour says is that the trouble is that the other side can do magic too.
Yeah. I did really enjoy that. And I did love her description of him as like lion-like with like a mane of hair. I don't know why that really stuck and stood out to me this time around. I don't think we even meet this character in the movies. I'm pretty sure we never meet this character in the movies.
No, we do. He's at the beginning of this movie, and they just have him making an announcement. And he's also in the seventh movie,
is
too.
Is he the one that brings them the...
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It does not look like the character is described in the book, then. He does not look like a lion.
Not quite as lion-like.
Not as lion-esque.
Lion-esque as he's described. I remember as we were waiting for this book, discussing with my boss at the time, because we were both Harry Potter fans, this description, because this was one of the parts that she had released as a promo, and thinking, is this somehow like Godric Gryffindor? But no, it's not Godric Gryffindor. So
yeah, it's not that cool.
No. So yeah, I think this is something that, you know, this is this chapter really sets us up for where we are, which is things are going south, and it doesn't look good, you know, for muggles or for wizards. And the stakes have really been set very high. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that she does really well here in this chapter, unconventionally, as we might think for a Harry Potter fan. But she does a great job of just showing us what we're up against.
Well, this is also one of last time I think we were pretty well introduced to things outside of our own like world that we've come to be comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
But this is probably the first time where it's like, this is so much bigger than Harry Potter, like than the character of Harry, right? Like this involves so much more. This involves the entire universe that she spent five books creating. And it really kind of speaks to that, how that goes and what all we are faced with. And really kind of, I guess, raises the stakes, if you will, by introducing it in this fashion and sharing. It also kind of summarizes what's happened since the last book without her being so expository. Like, she's got a reason to tell it to you instead of it just being like, oh, well, do you remember that one time that this happened? Right? Like, it has context and purpose. So it's also, it also, I think, improves just the nature of the storytelling that she can pick up from where she wants to pick up instead of trying to pick up from where she has to.
Well, and I think, too, that it helps us elevate just exactly how important the mission is that Harry's on. Like you said, this is so much bigger than Harry Potter, but in the end, it comes down to Harry and Voldemort. And so when we see these stakes, it does kind of make you, what I think she does is she helps raise the stakes. Like, we thought we knew what they were at the end of the last book, but here she takes those and raises them by like 1,000.
Right.
Which, you know, okay. Thank you, JK.
It also shows a complete, we talked a little about a shift in the, a shift in the government of the ministry and their approach, but it also shows just kind of a cultural shift and how just the atmosphere of the wizarding world has changed over whatever period of time we're faced with, which we imagine is fairly short, probably a couple of months. It's probably just summer, mm-hmm. Based on what we know of book to book. So it also kind of shows you how quickly all that happened and how drastic of a 180 we went. We went from 0 to 60 in a summer. So I think that also is her way of kind of showing all of that too, and showing that the what we've known of the culture is not going to be what we're looking forward to going forward.
Well, and I think one of the things that also does is great is she kind of shows she's really referencing some historical things here. I mean, Fudge is Neville Chamberlain before World War II, and you know, Scrimgeour coming in is much more akin to Churchill. Where he sees the danger that all of these, that the entire wizarding world is in, and puts them on the war footing that they should have been on for a lot longer. So I think that's kind of interesting to watch her play with those historical realities, which is always great when people are, you know, she's able to pull on that idea. It feels very real world. So like you said, you make that shift now in the wizarding world. We're at war. And that was, what's great about that is that the Order of the Phoenix, that's the last chapter. It says the second war begins.
Yeah.
So this is really picking up on that theme, which is, yes, we're at war now.
Yep, for sure. And it'll be interesting to see where we pick up with our sort of main characters now from here with a new minister and what is that like? And you know, it's been interesting to see how much Dumbledore has sort of written off the ministry as well. Fudge mentions he's written to him numerous times with no response, and that Dumbledore won't give him more details about X, Y, and Z. And
right.
So it's super interesting to see all of that play out too, and how they're sort of taking over. I kind of felt like at the end of this chapter, the Ministry of Magic is taking over the British Prime Minister's office in sort of this like crisis control mode. Right. Like they are stepping in. He's taking care of this. He's going to send one of his people to St. Mungo's. He's going to staff him up with security. He's going to keep him in the loop. Right. It's a very like wartime approach to things. And it's really fascinating to see that drastic change and to see how much control the ministry really has at this point and what they're going to do with it.
Well, and that's something that we did forget to mention is that one of his close advisors has been already affected by an Imperius curse that's gone wrong. Mm-hmm. And he's been like quacking in public. And so they, like you said, they send him to St. Mungo's because they're the only people who are actually going to be able to heal him. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. In the end, what we're doing is we are putting the Muggle Prime Minister under the protection of the ministry, because as we mentioned, Muggles have no recourse against magic.
Right.
So they, you know, and what I appreciate is that even though they're separate, you know, the Ministry of Magic is and wizards hide themselves, right?
Yeah.
They still worry about the rest of the world and the impact that their magic has on people that don't even know they exist, which, you know, it shows, especially when we see the way that Muggles can treat wizards and vice versa, the fear that can go along with that. I think we see a good side of those who use magic and their power, using their power responsibly, not just to save themselves, but everyone.
Right. There's definitely an altruistic approach to this in this chapter. Mm-hmm. And this minister wants to, you know, that there's that relationship there is the first time we've officially had that established. You know, in the past, all we've done is hide. So it's interesting to see how that works. And I do love, the last thing that I want to touch on before we go to our outro is that I really love that when we first get the interaction between, when we get the recap of the Prime Minister's first interaction with the Minister of Magic, he goes, well, why didn't the previous Prime Minister tell me about this? And his approaches, his response is, would you tell anyone about this? Like, do you think anyone would believe you? And I love that they're really banking on using people's pride as a way of maintaining their secrecy. I thought that was such an interesting concept, that they're really banking on the fact that they know how far-fetched this sounds, and we know you're not going to say anything. So do you really want to sound like a crazy person? I thought that was really fascinating that she introduces that, because I feel like this is the first time that she took magic and put it in our world, like in the real world, mm-hmm. and said, this yeah. is the real world, yeah. and this is how absurd it all is. So,
mm-hmm. yeah, 100%. So, I'm really excited to get to this book. You know, this is one that I would say probably has not been a favorite of mine in the past for the series, in the sense, like, when I'm just ranking them.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to get into it and see where we go then with this story and what it's like as we kind of dissect it through it. But I mean, I would say it's a strong start.
Yes.
I think this book has a very strong start, and especially with what we were talking about, the way that it picks up where we were at the end of the Order of the Phoenix. So Drea, as we're getting into that and, you know, you're moving into a new house. If people want to catch up with you and talk about anything with you, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's COFFMAN.
And you can find me on Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero, and Twitter, all in the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network. I do a show with my good friend John Mills, and we talk about Star Wars each and every week on Aggressive Negotiations. It's been a lot of fun. In fact, last couple weeks, we have been celebrating the fact that the Clone Wars is coming back with some special guests. So check that out. I'm over on the Trek FM network. I do two shows. One's called The Orb. I do that with Chris Jones when we can get a chance to get together and talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I do the General Geek Show over there, which is the 602 Club, which is so much fun. We talk about all the fandoms we love. In fact, coming up this fall, Adrea is going to be a guest as we talk about Frozen because, well, she's a parent.
What?
So, you know.
Oh, and I love Kristen Bell.
She's seen
Bell.
It 1,000 times.
Yeah.
Well, who doesn't yeah. love Kristen Bell? She's forking awesome.
She really is.
And then you can find me on one more show, and it's called Cinema Stories, and I do that with my good friend Courtney, and we talk about films there through the lens of faith. So we want to say, though, thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.